What a great pod that. No, we're starting that again.
Welcome to the Brad and Body Podcast. You already know who we are. We wouldn't be here, so let's not waste any more time. Here's Bradley.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Brad and Body Podcast. Bottomed, how are you, my friend?
I am thrilled, and you didn't mention, and you should have mentioned in your intro.
I left this it to
is,
you.
This is our 100th episode.
It is.
Of the Brad and Body Podcast. Yes, that's right. You couldn't get rid of us. We're still here, and we have a particularly super guest. So I'll let you do the intros, Brad.
We do. We looked at a number of people we wanted for the 100th, and this guy, well, we couldn't get a better one. Bodies tried to cancel 99 episodes with me, but we got there. So, Body, thank you for sticking it out.
They're hard to find.
And today we have a beauty. Born in Frankston, Victoria, he spent time at the AIS before attending, and I hope I say this right, Valparaiso University in 2009-13. He then played 2 years at Beşiktaş in Turkey before 3 seasons at Lokomotiv in Russia, where he was an all-Euro Cup first team in 2018. He's played 59 games in the NBA for the Dallas Mavericks, and he was part of the 2020 Philadelphia squad in 2020. He is, of course, a huge part of that Boomers culture that turned it around starting in 2013, but he did go to the World Cup in 14 and the Olympics in 16, and man, can this boy shoot the rock. He is an integral part of the Southeast Melbourne Phoenix, and we're actually doing this on a Sunday, and last night he came back and had a beautiful three on the buzzer from half court, and it was great. He is known as Rowdy, but of course we are joined by not only one of the best players in our league, but one of the nicest players in our league. Ryan Brockhoff, lovely to have you here, mate.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. I feel honoured to be on for the 100th episode. That's big news. Obviously, all the big names cancelled and couldn't get on, so I appreciate you guys dropping down and grabbing me.
Don't be like that. I mean, you've got an NBA career. We can talk. There's a lot to talk about. But I want to start by saying, a while back, and this is I'm just testing my memory here, but 1983, when Frankston was part of the NBL, and you're from Frankston, there was a Brockhoff playing for that Frankston team. Now I'm guessing that was your dad.
Correct. It was. So he was part of that one season that Frankston played in the NBL. Sort of don't know too much about his basketball career. I don't think he played a lot of minutes during that season, just kind of off the bench, a rebounding long athlete. I guess we got a bit of NBL experience in the family. So it was nice to come back and sort of, I guess, follow in his footsteps to some degree.
So is that how you came into basketball? It was like a family thing. Dad played and you were a kid, you're growing, and was it like a family playing basketball, or did you discover it through school or some other means?
It was probably more through mum, actually. So mum was quite good basketball growing up. 1983, dad's NBL season, I was minus 7 years old at the time. so don't have too many memories of that. But I was more so around mum, and she was pretty good junior basketballer and played at a high level here in Victoria going through. And then she had kids, you know, pretty young, and sort of floated in and out of basketball between all of us. And me being the youngest, sort of, she went back after me and played a little bit more. And she always tells stories that I used to go to the games and the other three knuckleheads were running around causing chaos, and I was sitting on the bench just watching with the basketball in hand, just trying to run out at halftime and timeouts and shoot the basketball. So it's something from a young age that I've loved, and it's more so from mum.
That's fantastic. Ryan, could I ask, when did you play your junior career at Frankston, and did that establish you to go to IAS, or was it state teams? How did you get there?
Did all my juniors at Frankston. Actually started off in the second team in under 12s before moving up. But played all my juniors there. Only made the state team in top age 18s. So I was a decent junior, but not great. Sort of a late developer, late maturer. So it wasn't until, you know, I was 16 or so that I actually started growing, which kind of helped me out. So I had some guard skills and some big skills and I can kind of grow into it. But everything sort of changed in that under 18 top age year. Made the state team. We ended up winning nationals that year. While I was with Frankston under 16s, we won VC as well. So we had a good squad and I was always a good player, but never kind of, I was always sort of a step behind or a little bit short. And then everything sort of came together in under 18s, good tournament, and then got picked up from AS from there. So it was definitely from the nationals and having a good tournament and things just blossomed from there.
Just a quick one. Where were those nationals? I'm just curious from a father point of view, actually.
I believe it was down in Tassie. I think it was Launceston. My first one.
Right, yeah. Right. So was Guy Malloy coaching that?
Yes. He was right. My first state coach. So, always,
final.
Whenever I see Guy, I give him a big hug and got good memories from that team.
Ryan, we always ask this question of, we've had a lot of guys on here who have been to AIS and to college. Can you answer, did you enjoy your experience at both of those?
I did, and I better pull you up for butchering the name. Valparaiso University.
I told him five times, Ryan. I told him five times.
It can tell me 10 times. I'll never remember it. Don't worry.
I told him the Turkish team as well. Never mind. Go on. Sorry, Ryan.
Beşiktaş. I had some tough names that I went and played for. But, look, I did enjoy my time. Obviously, it's a big challenge and a big change to move in the state at 16 and get away from friends and family. But as far as the development side and helping me to grow from a boy to a man, it was a great step for me and a way for me to kind of gain my own independence. And a lot of basketball is how much you put into it and how much you're willing to work. And it gives you all the accessibility to do that. And it kind of puts it on you as a person and as a player, is how much you want to put in and how hard you want to work and where you want to go. And I was lucky enough to have Marty Clark, who's a great development coach and, helped a lot of guys go through that program and onto bigger and better things. And it really helped, I guess, set the stage for college. And then, you know, that next big leap of changing countries and not knowing anyone and going to a completely new environment. So I love my time at AIS. It was difficult. It was challenging at times, but as far as a career and personal growth, it was perfect for me.
Yeah, brilliant. Who was in that class with you?
So I had Del Vadova, Brock Modem, Jordan Page, Christian Salicic, trying to think who else. Jason Kadee was sort of in that class. Todd Blanchfield.
It's not a bad crew.
Yeah.
Yeah, Mitchell Young. Cody Ellis. Yeah, we had quite a strong group. So it was great getting to sort of challenge myself against the best players in Australia day in, day out.
So you've now gone overseas, and like you said, I just love hearing the intrigueness growing from a boy to a man and things like that. What was college experience like?
It wasn't like the movies. So Valparaiso was a small school, not a big party school. So I knuckled down and at that time when I was going through college, professional basketball was not, I guess, known whether I would progress to that, whether I wanted to do that, you know, how basketball and I would develop. But I sort of jumped into my studies pretty hard. I got a degree in kinesiology and exercise science during my time. And it was only kind of the last 2 years that I was there that sort of basketball took off. And I started to have some really good seasons and started thinking ahead after that. But it was just the next challenge. I loved being over there. I loved sort of the fan base that we had, being a small school, but in Indiana, it's basketball, basketball, basketball. So we had a lot of really passionate fans and a great student section, and we got better each year. My first year, I think we went 15-17 or something like that. It's sort of the bottom of the league, and last two seasons we basically won it and had really good years. So it was a great experience, and I got to do a lot of that with some really great people and made some great friends. And we did it all together, you know, from the bottom, I guess, to the top. And some of my closest friends are from that time.
Beautiful.
Right. Okay, I'm surprised if you had Marty Clark, you didn't end up at St. Mary's.
It's the question I get often. I was like, why didn't you go to St. Mary's? I was like, oh, they didn't want me, basically. So I think Clint Steindl went there the season before I was ready to go. So they've kind of like, oh, we've got one Australian wing that can shoot the ball. Let's just stick with what we got. So no, St. Mary's weren't interested in me, and I don't know. Maybe I wanted to get away from the American Australian Institute of Sport over there.
Exactly right. That's exactly what it was. So look, here's the question: like, when you come out of college, you don't get drafted. What made you choose Europe rather than come back to the NBL?
I just think opportunity at that point. You know, I felt like getting a good, I guess, base over in Europe would lead to more opportunities down the line, just at that time with where the NBL was at and where I felt, you know, I could be most successful. And, you know, EuroLeague was sort of the next aim for me. I saw that as the clearest pathway to get to the NBA at that stage. So sort of this was a decent club over in Europe in a you know, a strong basketball country that, you know, would sort of help me develop and showcase my talents, hopefully move forward. So that was sort of my thinking. You know, if I had my time again now, the NBL is such a great pathway now that maybe it would have been different. But sort of at that time and where I felt like I was at, it was Europe was the best way to go and the pathway to making more money and hopefully, you know, more experience in EuroLeague and then the NBA.
Yeah, I mean, the NBL of 2022 is not the NBL of a decade ago. So, I was just curious as to what created that decision for you, because I'm interested in the origin of your name, like Brokhoff. What part of Europe is that from?
It's actually Dutch. So I have a Dutch passport as well. So dad was actually born in the Netherlands, and he came over as a young kid to Australia with my grandparents, and so I was able to get that passport. But during the 5 seasons I was over there, excuse me, even though I had it, I still didn't need it. They still brought me in as an import, so it was just kind of a break in case of emergency.
Right.
So you're in Europe, and now the Boomers are creating this culture, and you're a huge part of it. Talk to us what it's like having to be in Europe, which I don't want to call it distance, but that's not easy. We've got NBA players, we've got Australian, and Andre was your coach who's here in Australia coaching, and you're in Europe. Was that, how did that all fit? Because it seems seamless.
It was just obviously with technology, just being able to stay in contact a little bit easier. And I can't remember what it was. I think I was still in Europe, but Andre did visits and came out and saw players and you know, big part of building that culture and making sure everyone was together and, you know, needs and stuff that we had that we could address early. So it was all about just maintaining contact and sort of, I guess, 2013 was my first year professional and sort of first foray into the national team. I attended the 2012 camp just before the London Olympics. It was my first Boomers camp and hadn't really been on the radar. And this is when Brett Brown was coaching and made it through to the emergency for London. And I kind of, I don't know, I didn't sort of see myself at that time that I was that close to making it, but it was sort of a motivating thing for me that, you know, I'm 20, 21, 22 at that stage. Sort of little from left field and now I'm sort of emergency, you know, the next sort of phase, you know, I really want to, like, Olympics has been as a kid was always a dream mine. We had the 2000 Olympics here in Australia and I was 10 years old, and that was a huge motivation for me to get into basketball as well. Mm-hmm. So there's always a goal for me, and to kind of get really close and not quite make it is sort of that next stage. So I was just trying to do whatever I could, buy in however I needed to, whether it was, you know, getting on phone calls or texting people or just improving as a way to be part of that Boomers program going forward, because I saw the talent and how good the squad could be, and I wanted to be a part of it.
And that leads me to my next question. When was the year? Was it at the Worlds? Was it the Olympics that you guys were like, okay, we're not making up numbers here. We are a medal chance, because there was that distinct transition. You felt it, but when did the team feel it?
I think going into the World Champs in 2014, we knew we could, but I don't know if we had the firm belief that we did going into the Olympics. You know, we had an all right tournament at that World Championships, but I guess sort of let ourselves down in, I think it was the quarterfinals or at that stage. So it was just sort of all right, we know we could compete, we know we can do this, but did we really believe that we could go in there and win something? And sort of after that, we had meetings and Paddy and Joe were big leaders of that, just saying, look, we have the talent here, look around the room, but it's something to just say it. It's actually another thing to believe it and to kind of will it into existence. So it's kind of from there we sort of broke it away and had a real open, honest conversation. It's like, no, we're not going into to, you know, finish fifth or, you know, even to win a bronze. Like, our goal is to win gold. We believe we can. Everyone needs to either you start believing in it, start feeling that way, or get the hell out, sort of thing.
Yeah.
Like we're going there to win, we're going there to do something that we haven't done before, and everyone needs to be on board with that.
There were two factors I think going into Rio though that really played to that strength. One of those was having Andrew Bogut around. I think, you know, as soon as you add someone of that presence into that group, the confidence, I'm sure, went up. And the other thing which I found was really interesting, and I'm sure you were a part of this, when Paddy organised for the squad to go to Uluru for a little while. And yeah, I mean, that to sort of feel your Australianism or feel, you know, what it means to represent your country. I think there was a lot starting to happen culturally toward making the Boomers a medalist, you know, and you can sort of see it happening there. You could sense it, and the way you guys were playing that tournament in Rio was just full of confidence and full of belief.
Yeah, and that's a great point. I remember that Uluru trip vividly. You know, it was a great time for us to get away as a team and connect, and we got out in the community, and Paddy, I think with Basketball Australia, help refurbish some courts out there, and just we could kind of get away and really gain an understanding of what we're doing this for and who we're doing this for, and having Bogut around as well with his experience, and you just have someone like that and you just walk taller with him around. So you know, we had a great mix of youth and experience and different skill sets that complemented each other and underlying the belief and the trust in each other. And we were playing great basketball, and you know, we got so close during that tournament. It was heartbreaking.
You got screwed. Cool. Come on, you got screwed.
Absolutely screwed.
Calls cut it out. They were garbage.
It's still something that hurts to this day, but that was the belief that we played with, and you know, we pushed America during I think the pool round or something, and had, you know, room with the chance to win until I think Kyrie kind of took over in the fourth, and we let Mallow hit about 55 threes. But then we just sort of shot ourselves in the foot in the semi-finals. But other than that game, you know, it was an amazing tournament, and proud, but it's still obviously hard to be that close and to fall short. But it's a little bit less now that I've been able to see them sort of.
You didn't fall short. You had it ripped out of your hands by referees. you had your hand on it, and they just ripped it away with a couple of crap balls. I'll never forgive them.
Rowdy. I want to move now. 2018. You know, you've been playing professional for a number of years, and then the Dallas Mavericks come knocking on your door, and you sign, if I'm not mistaken, a 2-year deal. I'm watching from afar. Tell me what it's like as a Frankston kid who's now just signed a 2-year deal with the Dallas Mavericks.
It was pretty unbelievable at that stage. So I just finished with the Russian team, Loco, and we had a really good season. We broke the record for Euro Cup wins in a row. We're marching our way to the final. Unfortunately, I break my thumb and need surgery and miss out on the final for that. And ended up losing it, but had a really good season. It was my best over in Europe. I think it was first team all Euro Cup, and we did really well in the Russian league as well. So it was all like, okay, what's sort of next? I'd actually signed a deal a couple of days before Dallas came talking with FS, a big Turkish EuroLeague club. So I just signed a deal with an NBA out. I was very happy to sort of sign there. Obviously a very big EuroLeague club. I think they've won a championship or two since sort of those years in the last, you know, 3 or 4 years on some good money as well. And I was pretty content with that. I was like, okay, well, you know, I've had a really good season. I'm sort of 27, 28, sort of hitting the peak of your playing days. Yeah. And to get back to EuroLeague, I was like, all right, bang. And then agent calls me, I think next day. He's like, oh, Dallas are interested in you. Originally, I think it started as a two-way deal. He's like, yeah, they're interested in the two-way. You know, they want you to come into camp. You could sort of almost fight for that last roster spot. And I was like, no, I'm not doing it for a two-way. I'm not giving up sort of X amount of dollars. And
that makes sense.
Opportunity to go play in the G League. And this is G League, you know, 5 years ago, which is, I think it was like 24 grand a year and, you know, tough travel schedule. And I knew my game didn't quite translate well to that. It's very much just run up and down, and whoever's got the ball is making moves and just shooting it. And it's
a selfish league. Let's be honest. Everyone's trying to get to the NBA, so they're all pushing their own thing. So no, that would not have been a good environment for you at all.
It just wasn't for me. So I was like, no, I'm obviously flattered, and it's a great opportunity, but I'm not going to pass it up. And I think the next day, he gives me a call, and they're like, okay, well, they want to do a 2-year deal. How are you feeling about that? I was like, well, yeah, of course. I'm not going to say no.
Are you sure you didn't mishear the first phone call? Are you sure you didn't say 2-year then, and then you just thought he said two-way?
Maybe. I just heard NBA in Dallas, and just everything went numb. But no, I think there's an underlying story that Cuban actually spoken to Bogut. And sort of said, hey, who do you know? We're looking for like someone to come in, fill a role, sort of a 3-point shooter, bit of defense. And he threw my name out there around this time as well. So there's a bit of word that Bogut had a big hand to play in that as well.
Oh, that's excellent.
I'm hearing that. Nice. That's great.
Yeah, it's nice that a fellow Australian sort of looking after me like that, and obviously our national team time together. Left a good impression, and Dallas was actually a team that I followed growing up. I was a big Dirk fan, so it was kind of everything came full circle, and got to sort of live out a childhood dream of playing in the NBA and playing with one of my idols from being a kid.
Now, that's fantastic. Great story. Ryan, I think it was last year you did a article with Matt Logue, and it was something that certainly caught my eye as someone who went through some mental health when I retired through basketball and stuff. You spoke very openly about it, which I thought was fantastic. For kids, you know, listening and the stresses that come with it, what is the advice that you have for these kids with how hard it is today around the environment?
Just to speak up, just to find someone that you're comfortable to talk openly and honestly with. Look, I have a wonderful support system. My wife's incredible and my family's always very supportive. And even I struggled to communicate with them. And this was stuff stemming from my childhood that I hadn't addressed and still working through to this day. So it was just a culmination. And for me, being a shy and reserved kid, I just kept things to myself. So I guess my thing is just to put yourself in a vulnerable state to be able to talk to people. And if you need to find some professional help, go find some professional help. It's helped me, and it's sort of rekindled my, not just joy in basketball, but around life. And now I can appreciate what I have more than I did during sort of a tough period. So everyone goes through ups and downs, but you need to be able to talk to people to kind of get things off your chest.
Yeah, great answer.
You haven't had terribly much success since you came back to play with the Phoenix in terms of injuries. You've had a bit of a run of can you just walk us through the injuries you've had since you've been back?
Yeah, so I think I had a grade one groin strain during that. So I came back halfway through the season a couple of years ago. Started to play well, little groin strain, came back from that, copped an errant elbow and fractured my eye socket. So that was kind of actually one of the more scary injuries I've had during my career.
Yeah.
Just with the impact to the eye. My retinas were different sizes for a different quite a period of time. So being able to focus and having blurred vision was interesting, and basically being told if I cop another blow directly to the eye that there could be permanent damage going forward.
Wow.
Things about I had to kind of keep an eye on. So basically the floor of the eye socket was where the crack was, and that could, I guess, open up and the eye could drop back and require surgery and all this sort of stuff. So it was.
Did you contemplate goggles at that time? Like if you came back, did you think, oh, I'll wear goggles?
I did. I came back and wore the goggles, and they were absolutely shocking to play with. I spent every waking second wiping the sweat and cleaning
them
off.
It was
so bad. But that's the only way I could feel any sort of comfort coming back and playing until I'd sort of cleared the recovery period where the eye socket had sort of healed, and I was at less risk of causing any sort of permanent problem. So yeah, I rocked the goggles for about 4 or 5 weeks and wasn't quite the same during that period. And then what else have I had? A hamstring this year, AC, grade 2 AC joint sprain. A couple just random non-basketball. You don't hear too many, you know, AC joints or eye sockets. It's more soft tissue stuff, but I've had a little bit of both. It hasn't been the best run. So hopefully now I've come back, got through last night's game, that we can have a bit of good luck and keep me out on the court.
Well, we're excited that it's all over. That's the good thing. It's all over now. It's Rowdy's back.
Yeah. And we hear a lot about, well, on this program, we talk a lot about groin strain because Brad's always straining his groin on a regular basis, often on the show.
boom, boom. Now, we've asked some hard questions here, but there's nothing harder, Rowdy, than the ones we're about to give you. We're about to ask you, we're going to throw you some names as we always do at this time of the pod. And all we're asking for you is the first name, anecdote, sentence, whatever comes in, story that you can think of when we throw these names. So I'm going to start it off and I'm going to say to you, Joe Ingles.
Larrikin, one of the funniest, most annoying people you'll ever meet.
Okay, so you haven't met Brad previously, obviously. Okay, moving right along, Dirk Nowitzki.
a role model. He's even when I arrived there and he was 41, could barely walk, hobbled up and down the court, he still was in the gym first and last to leave, putting up shots, working on whatever he could. So a role model in how to be professional.
Just quickly getting away from that, are you still maintaining a friendship with him or a relationship? Like, are you ever in touch? Because I know he's coming to Australia soon.
Yeah, we still text. I wouldn't say regularly, but every now and then, just sort of catching up. So yeah, a few of those boys from the Dallas days I still keep in touch with, and whenever I head back over there and go visit and stuff, I'll sneak some tickets off them.
Yeah, that's awesome. Keeping with the Dallas theme, Mark Cuban.
Oh, I'm going to go away from sort of the what's sort of seen on the outside. He's very caring. So even after they released me, which wasn't caring on his part, and I went and joined Philly for the bubble, and then my wife got COVID right as we were supposed to leave for that. And my wife has an underlying condition which puts her more at high risk, so we weren't sure how she was going to be. But he reached out personally when he saw that what was going on, and just sort of said, "Look, if you need anything, we're here for you. Just sort of let me know." So that's sort of a side that maybe not everyone kind of sees.
Nah, beautiful story. Yeah, absolutely.
My estimation of him went right through the roof when the Mavs won the championship a while back, and he got the previous owners out. I don't know if you saw that when, you know, the elderly couple that owned the club before he did. I thought that sort of gesture shows what sort of person he is.
I thought he was fantastic on The Entourage. I loved him on that show. He was great.
All right. Okay, next one. Mitch Creek.
Oh, the Bull. You know, a fearless leader, driven, hardworking, but a cheeky man on off the court.
He looks like it too. Luka Doncic.
Oh, it just made me feel bad about myself day in, day out. just made basketball look so easy. And here I am working my butt off and trying to defend him. And whatever I did, he just had answers for. And at least I'm not the only one who's gone through that, because he's just tearing up the NBA.
Isn't he what? Yep.
Okay, Andre Lemanis.
How to describe Andre in just a few words, but a big reason and a big part of my career and growth, and helping establish that culture as part of the Boomers. So forever thankful for Andre for giving me that opportunity and encouraging me along the way.
I got a final one for you, final question for you. When the boys won the bronze medal, I'm presuming you would have been watching it?
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
What did you go through emotionally?
Oh, I smiled, I cried, to be honest, look, I there was a part of me that was selfish and felt bad that I wasn't there. There was a whole range of emotions, but I remember sitting up watching Gazy after the game, and I think he summed it up perfectly for all of us that had been part of the Boomers program. You know, I left feeling nothing but joy and happiness for those guys, and felt in a little small way that I was still part of it. So I think how Gazy summed it up is there's no better way than how he did.
Yep.
Ryan, it's that time of the pod where you've given up more than enough of your time. We can't thank you for being on this. I mean, for our listeners, you know, I was lucky enough to call a commentary game with Rowdy last week, and just the nicest bloke in the world said, "Hey, we do this pod. I'd love to come on. Just let me know." Like, for a guy that has got to the absolute highest levels you can ask for, there's not a more down-to-earth guy. So we wish you all the best. We know you have a young 3-year-old that you got to take care of as well. Mate, thank you so much. We wish you all the best. Please, injury-free, and let's see that Ryan who's tearing up the court for the rest of the season. We wish you all the best, mate, and thanks again.
Thanks, guys. Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it. It was a bit of fun.
Couldn't have asked for a better 100th show, buddy. What a fantastic guy Ryan was.
Yes,
let me start. congratulations to you, mate. That's a nice milestone. 100 shows.
Yeah, I think we can both take a bow. But remember, this whole show, the whole concept of it was yours, Brad. So I'm really pleased that we've managed to get to 100. We managed to get to three digits together. What do you reckon? Which has been our best show? Who's been our best guest?
I'd probably say there's been 80 of them, so I'll go through them. So I'd probably say John Rilley was great recently.
Yeah.
Wurtho was a good one. Vlahov, right. Andrew Gaze, Lindsay Gaze.
Yep.
What about you?
Michelle Timms, Sarah Butzov, Tess Madgen.
Gorge.
Brian Gorge, both times. Chris Anstey, both times.
Yes. Oh.
Yeah, look, geez, we actually had some really good guests. Ryan today, I mean, so. And
Sarah so, recently before the
yep,
Worlds.
Yep, and we've got another good Opal coming up soon. I'm hopeful of an Opal.
Well, hang on, to answer your question then, I don't have a favourite. They're all damn great.
they've been very good and very forthcoming in the things they've told us. We've even had Andre Lamanis from Warren.
Yes, we've got
Joey Wright. Geez, we've had heaps.
Yep.
If you haven't been on the show, please.
Yeah, what's going on? Jason Kadee. Sam Mitchell. We've had some great guys. Mate, we obviously spent a few days together here at the Worlds when the Women's Worlds Championship was here. You obviously were trekking back. I think you went through Darwin and Perth to get home because it was the longest drive ever. But
you lived in Auckland.
Yeah, it's but look, we have to talk about it. What a fantastic way for the Opals to change that culture, if that's the right words. And your articles have been very good. I've been reading those. But the rose gold was great, mate.
I think so. I think we're now in a position, our men have got rose gold, our women have got rose gold. Mm. Sort of we're back on the map. I think it was interesting that the women's culture fell away so badly over the last few years, and at the same time the men's culture became so much stronger, so that in the end Paddy Mills is addressing the team, the Opals team, at one stage to sort of remind people of the privilege it is to wear the green and gold. And I think we saw that. I think everybody that played for Australia at the World Cup was really into it. Lauren Jackson, what a finale. 30 points. Yeah, I mean, but I really think it was the only game where she was posting up down and doing a trademark fake and spin to the baseline jump shot, things that we've seen from her across her career. It was a terrific finale. Bit unlucky against China, made some bad mistakes in the last minute.
Cost
them a chance at the US. I don't think we would have beaten the US, but it would be nice.
Well, look,
nice to give them a run.
You and I spoke about that. Everyone was playing for second, no question. But there was some. I think they'd look back at that game and rue the decisions that were made against China. But thankfully, they got that win. Which in a sense made up for it, if you call it that way. So it was great. Mate, it's been an interesting start to the NBL. Would probably be the best round. We're round three now. Adelaide, of course. Very briefly, we'll talk about what a fantastic tour in the States, beating the powerhouse Suns.
Phoenix Suns, had the best record. They were 64-18, and the 36ers were 10-18.
Yeah, and all of them, and all of the guns played. So that was great.
Let's not forget Josh Giddey in Oklahoma City beating them by 33, though. That's equally pertinent.
Yeah. So let me just ask you very quickly then in a summary, how do you see Adelaide's season going? We now know they're 1-1 so far this weekend. So, they bounce back after a pretty bad loss, but I don't think you take a lot out of that. What do you see for the year for them?
I think they're definitely a playoff contender for the first time in quite some time, so that should make the 36ers fans happy. I worry about the fact that, other than Mitch McCarron and Antonius Cleveland in their starting group, they're the only two that seem to be genuinely committed to playing defense on a consistent basis. So that's going to cause them issues, but they've got incredible firepower. Craig Randall, some of the shots he was in. I mean, we love to have an import hero in Adelaide called Randall. And here's the latest, and some of the shots he was hitting in the last game against Illawarra were sensational. So I think they'll be around the mark, but I think we're again making the mistake across the board of discounting Tasmania, and that's a mistake.
And New Zealand.
Absolutely. If I'm James Duncan, I'm perhaps a little bit nervous. about
the league? Well, look, as we're calling this pod, and just so everyone knows, we obviously organise with Ryan. He's got a very big, busy schedule with games and everything, and he played last night and bounced up today and met with us, which was outstanding. This is a Sunday, and right now when we're calling this, Sydney are up by 20. Brisbane in dire straits, mate. You don't want to be 0-4. If I'm James Duncan, I am worried.
Yeah, I'm sort of just checking out what the lovely tourist sites are in and around southeast Queensland. Quickly check them out before I might be heading off. let's hear your Rosen Rattler. Come on, give us a Rosen Rattler before.
Well, my Rattler is Rajon Tucker from the Melbourne United team. Now, I've been around long enough, right? Not as long as some, no names mentioned, but I've been around long enough where, mate, it's just not the way. You don't come here and just go, I'm going to be the greatest import in the league, or I'm going to win the title, or I'm going to get this, I'm going to get that. I remember, and I hope, you know, that the one guy said, what was the one guy? I have a name for every one of my dunks, and I prefer dunking better than sex. And then that was an American import that came out here for the Kings, and everyone was like,
he's an idiot.
Yeah, what? What are you thinking, mate? You know, like, so here's Rajon Tucker coming out and going, I'm the best import in the league this year. Mate, nah. You're just putting a target on your back. You don't do that. And yep. I'm sorry to say it. No, he's not.
No, not by a long way. All right, I got a nasty. You ready for this?
Go for it.
The NBL's please explain to Jesse Wagstaff for setting a legitimate screen in midcourt. Poor old Lockie Barker hits it because his teammate, the guy defending Wagstaff, doesn't say, hey, screen on your right or whatever he should was on your left, wherever it was, doesn't say a word. You know, he does the Marcel.
I'm with you, mate. He's the one that should get the please explain.
NBL. And even if you look at it, Dean Vickerman standing on the sideline right by it too, Dean could have said screen coming.
Yeah.
You know, so for the NBL then to turn around to Wagstaff because, he has some history of indiscretion, okay, fine. But that's got nothing to do with this. He said a legitimate screen. It's a legitimate part of basketball. People saying, oh, in slow motion, you know, he's dropping his shoulders. Oh, man, yeah, do it frame by frame. It's going to look worse. It was a pure basketball play. The poor kid got hurt. And nobody wants to see that, but for him to be under, for Jesse Wagstaff now to be under some scrutiny for setting a perfectly league, where does that end, Brad? Oh, I boxed out, the guy jumped over my back, I boxed out, he fell down, he hit his head. Oh, right, okay. I dunked on somebody and that they got hurt. Like, where does that end? That's a can of worms the NBL should not be opening. You're not the AFL. Shut the hell up and don't do crap like that. You got some other idiot yelling out all the time, it's a world-class league. Well, then don't act like a bush league.
Lodge says it as it is, BOTINAGY.com. Hey, can I just mention as well, Patty Mills' Beyond Basketball, written by our man, Boddy. It's awesome, and it's also got a fair bit of Ryan Brockhoff in there as well. Boddy, yep. Congratulations on our 100th show, mate. It's been an absolute delight.
Congratulations to you too, Brett.
Thank you. We're not ending, by the way, everyone. This is not a farewell tour. We just wanted to say thanks so much. We're back. We're loving it. We've got an Opal coming up very soon, so you'll look forward to that. We'll get all behind the scenes. Boddy, have a fantastic week, mate.
Thank you. See you soon.
See you next week.
Hey, Brett.
Yo.
Did you know that the Iowa State Athletic Hall of Fame has a new inductee, a friend of the program, Dean Utah?
No way, Sparky.
Yeah.
He was inducted. Awesome. I did not know that.
No, it's fantastic. Yeah.
Oh,
that's a well done.
Absolutely fantastic. Lots of love to him. Fantastic.
And from what I heard, his speech blew everybody off the floor.